Welcome to episode 28 of Climate Champions with my guest, Keith Mathis. I'm Lee Krivat, and every week I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about what motivated them to engage in climate change mitigation, what they do to help, and what their vision for the future is. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. On episode 28, my guest is Keith Mathis, president and CEO of NSAI Energy. I met Keith about 20 years ago when I first joined the utility industry. Back then, Keith sold information technologies, but in 2015, he moved into the renewable energy space. He has some very exciting projects in the pipeline, including housing for veterans that leverages renewable energy, storage, and geothermal cooling to significantly reduce costs. Milo, can you tell us a little bit about geothermal cooling?
Well, I got hot rocks in my barbecue. I don't want no fire. I need them to cool. And so I go over and pick up some geothermal cooling and spray it all over so no backyard fire am I fueling. Geothermal cool, geothermal cool. I made the charcoal safe by using geothermal cooling. Geothermal cooling is not a toy, though, so don't ingest it, and if it gets in your eyes, wash with cold water and immediately seek help.
Milo, having your bird accompany you was a nice touch, and if you would have said dig a hole in the ground and bury the rocks in the ground, transferring the heat to the earth to cool the rocks, I would have given it to you. I met Milo Shapiro 20 years ago at Sempra Energy when, after a 15-year career in information technology, Milo followed his passion and created his company, ImproVentures, in 2000. Through it, he offers team-provising, team-building communication exercises through improv games, as well as motivational speaking where the audience gets to play from their seats. In 2004, he created Public Dynamics, coaching individuals in person or over Skype to improve their public speaking skills and material. You can learn more at www.miloshapiro.com. Geothermal cooling cools air in a building, think air conditioning, by moving heat from a building to below the Earth's surface using an underground loop and using the cooler temperature of the ground like a heatsink. Ground temperatures 6 or so feet below the Earth's surface stay relatively constant throughout the year. This allows the system to provide extremely efficient cooling and heating, too, all year long in virtually any climate. When I asked Keith about what sparked his interest in climate change, he talked about growing up in Kentucky and about a relative dying and another getting sick. Both of us were on the verge of tears. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm here with Keith Mathis, President and CEO at NSAI Energy. Welcome to Climate Champions.
Well, thank you very much, Lee. I'm happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
It's great to have you here. Can you talk about the moment when you were inspired to do something about climate change?
Probably the moment that really grabbed me the most was seeing some of the things that were going on in my native state of Kentucky. Being that it's a coal-producing state. However, there are problems with folks that work in the mines, and there are problems with the runoff from coal into the water supply that was poisoning a lot of people. And I think that's what really pushed me to get into some type of action to attack climate.
So not even necessarily the climate part of it, just the fact that the consequences of digging coal and what it caused.
Exactly.
A whole different angle, really.
Absolutely. I actually have coal miners in my family.
Wow.
So I had a great uncle that died of black lung. And I have a cousin who was a coal miner and got pretty sick, but he was able to recover and go on and became a paramedic. But it actually is personal with me.
That's a big deal. That is a really big deal. That's more personal than most of the stories that I've heard. When you meet somebody that doesn't believe in climate change, how do you attempt to convince them that there is such a thing?
Well, there are a lot of climate change deniers, as we all know. But when I start to have them look over kind of what's been going on with the weather and tornadoes in places that never had them before and earthquakes in places that never had them before and flooding during times and in locations that have never happened before. Think about the 500-year, 100-year floods that have been happening in places that never saw them before. It's hard to deny that something isn't going on.
Have you ever had success convincing somebody that did not believe into believing that this was an issue?
Actually, yes.
Can you talk about that? It's not common.
In some cases, usually it's the people who are dealing with the day-to-day operation, like my cousin's fellow coal miners. They know, they see, especially if you're talking about folks in Appalachia who have had the unfortunate situation of drinking the water from the runoff, they can't deny it. And so for those, it starts out with no way, no how, doesn't happen, to, well, wait a minute, this is pretty unusual, to, I can't deny. I don't know for sure, but I'm not so sure anymore if it isn't real.
So this is a common story that it's not really the data or the scientists. People say scientists agree about climate change, but what really gets people is when they start to experience it themselves, and there really isn't another explanation for what's going on.
That's exactly right.
Can you talk for a while about what you do?
Sure. I originally started out involved in the technology business.
We met each other then.
That's exactly right. We did. My whole drive in technology was always innovation. How are things being done a better way? Better, faster, cheaper. And it led me to deal with a lot of verticals in the utility space. In doing some of the computerized things and computer innovation things, I actually had a conversation with one of the associates with the utility, and they suggested to me, have you ever looked at getting your FERC authorization? Actually, my company was nominated in 2010 as the Minority Business of the Year.
That's awesome.
By a utility.
You want to say which utility?
Oh, sure. It's Sempra Energy.
Oh, Sempra. I used to work there.
We didn't win, but it was a national nomination. And so I was excited to be a part of it. And then they came to me and said, look, you're a certified diverse business enterprise with the California Public Utilities Commission. Have you ever considered getting your FERC authorization as a power marketer? And I said, I hadn't to this point, but I will now. And of course, in 2015, we applied and got our FERC authorization as a power marketer in all 9 regions of the country, which also allows us to own up to 500 megawatts of renewable energy per region. And that's kind of what started me into looking at closer and closer the renewable energy space and then how it affects climate change.
So I noticed a lot of people are drawn to it as a growth industry, maybe even before they fully understand climate change. For me, I was excited about the technology and I knew I was doing the right thing, helping to integrate more solar, but I didn't really understand it until I dug deeper and I was in it a while.
Well, I'm in the same boat. What really connected the dots for me was to understand how we could impact the decarbonization by utilizing renewable energy. And then putting it all, or driving it or tying it all the way back to my great uncle and to my cousins and understanding, well, wait a minute. If we're not digging coal, if we're not utilizing it to burn to create electricity, then maybe not only do we have the idea that we're affecting climate change, but there are other ancillary benefits that I hadn't even considered.
It's nice when what you do for a living can also be your mission.
Absolutely. And of course, I happen to have children and grandchildren, and when they found out what we were moving into, they got really excited, and that's when I really learned even more about climate change.
That's right. Is there anything about your prior background other than that it started in technology that you want to talk about?
Well, I was always interested in science. I have a bachelor's of science. I majored in psychobiology.
Psychobiology. Nice.
It's a study of the anatomical relationship between the brain and the body. But it's the whole science vein. And so technology, computer technology, hit that science vein for me. And then obviously renewable energy technology and the advancements also satisfy that science urge. I think it really set me on the path to understand that I was in something that I really probably has sought out all the way back to when I was in high school and maybe even before that when I was a little kid doing experiments.
It's interesting how the things you do throughout your life at some point come together and it all plays.
Yes. I'm amazed. I'm completely amazed.
How about challenges that you've had?
In moving into a space that you're starting out that you haven't done practically, generating investment is always a challenge in any business. And that's probably been the biggest challenge, is rallying the investment to go out. I mean, getting the projects and finding needs and providing solutions, which has always been what really got me going. In my experience, is the easy part. The more difficult part is having folks that get your vision and are willing and able to monetize that vision.
Can you talk about successes that you've had that you're allowed to talk about? Because I know you're working on a bunch of things that you can't talk about.
I am, and without getting in the specifics, part of what I told you about in the beginning, setting the level setting on coal, is that I actually have a partnership that's going with environmental remediation, what's called CCR, coal cleaning and reclamation. And I have a company that's pretty unique. They've got some technology that has severely driven the cost down and efficiencies, and they produce byproducts from cleaning up old coal mines that go into developing concrete. The gypsum is used for cement boards. The ash ponds that they clean up can be scrubbed and cleaned and used for other renewable uses.
So what's exciting about that is that then they don't have to make the concrete, which takes more energy.
That's correct. And then the cherry on top is that those cleaned up coal mines, and I know you probably read that there are a lot of coal mines that are shuttering across the country. So a lot of companies are closing down coal mines because the cost of renewables and the cost of storage are dropping. I think I read something that said that since 2010, solar and storage, the cost has dropped by 80%. I read something today that said that there's a contract with LADWP that the solar was 1.997 cents a kilowatt hour and storage was 1.3 cents a kilowatt hour.
Wow.
So their basic byline was say goodbye to gas and nukes.
Yeah, we're right there.
Yeah. And so the cherry on top, as I was saying before, is they're taking old coal mines and strip mines and converting them to solar farms. And I'm involved in projects to do exactly that.
So they get to leverage all the interconnection agreements, all the wire that's already there, all that work that's been done can be reused.
Correct.
That's awesome.
And that's exciting for me.
Yeah, yeah. What success are you most proud of that you've done?
Besides that one is another project that we're actually creating fully sustainable veteran housing facilities. We're taking locations and creating housing for veterans, and they're completely sustainable using solar storage and geothermal to produce air conditioning so that the veterans don't have any utility bills whatsoever. We're starting to move those forward, and we've been contacted by numerous locations to do this in different states. So I'm excited about that as well.
Very cool. And what is your vision for the future?
Generate as many renewable energy, solar and storage locations, be it with CNI, corporate and industrial, be it low-income housing organizations, be it residential organizations, and to harness the power that we know we have, that the good Lord generates for us every single day, to reduce cost, to provide jobs and opportunities, especially for folks that have been left behind, the Appalachians, coal miners out of work, urban area folks, to put these developments together so that we have a more diverse workforce in solar and wind and geothermal and renewables, because it is a growth industry, a fast-paced growth industry, and I want to harness that. So we're going to be as big as we can be, at the same time making sure that we make the lives of other folks better.
That is a great vision, and that vision is centric around what you're doing. Do you have a vision for what you see the country and or the world looking like in 20, 30, 40 years?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. And I'm glad you asked me that question, because I've been doing unbelievable amounts of reading and research and finding out what's going on globally in renewable energy. And I'm amazed at how many locations, even now in the United States, I think we have 4 states that have determined that renewable energy would be 100% of their energy production. And so what I see is, and this is my personal belief, I believe that if we can get more and more folks globally engaged in renewable energy, that we can create a whole different culture and approach to how we interconnect. And what I mean by interconnecting, I'm not just talking about electricity. I'm talking about personally. I think that we can bring people out of poverty. I think that we can provide opportunities for folks that haven't had them before. And the beauty of it is that we have resources that are generated on a daily basis that can be harnessed. So what I'd like to do is see a global movement. I'd like to see us as a country get back into the understanding that we're a part of this.
I mean, we're so awesome at innovation. We put our minds to things, we get it done.
There's nothing that we can't do if we do it together. I hear it often, that old African adage, if you want to go someplace from point A to point B, go alone. But if you want to go far, you go together.
Nice.
And so my whole thing is that the world is smaller than we think. And if we want to get this done, if we want to leave a legacy for our children and grandchildren and grandchildren's grandchildren, then we need to get and be about the business of getting this done. And we have the vehicle. We can use renewable energy to do that very thing. And that's my vision for the future.
Do you have thoughts about electric vehicles, electric transportation?
I love electric vehicles and electric transportation. I think that it's the wave of the future. I think we've got the tiger by the tail. I think that for many, many, many years, the major industries that are centered around transportation have had the idea, the notion. I mean, electric vehicles is not something that's new.
Right.
I mean, the idea has been around for a while. There's been fits and starts for a long, long time. But I think what our friends at Tesla have done and continue to do, and I wish them Godspeed and I hope they continue, is to be able to put that in the hands of the everyday man will go a very, very long way in settling all kinds of disputes that we find centered around fossil fuel, as well as putting more and more people in a position to be able to communicate and to travel back and forth with a renewable resource. I love it. I mean,
I can see it.
I'm a strong proponent.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, do you have any questions for me?
What do you see as the next move towards taking the 20th century models that are there with our grid and converting them to 21st century solutions?
There's a thing about utilities where they say they want reliable, efficient, safe energy. And that's kind of their objective. And I think they need to add clean and sustainable to that across the board. That would be a big step. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I guess the only other thing I would say is diversity is a big part of what I do and who I am. And I think that I found that inclusiveness really puts us on a course to do exactly what you said before. You talked about our abilities to be innovators and find solutions. I think that having us involved and engaged with everyone, you know, even the people that have been left behind.
The more people you have in the game, the better chance you're going to find what you need, right?
Exactly, yeah. because you would be surprised that some of the solutions that come from people and places that you would never guess would be able to bring those solutions. And so I think that the variety of experiences and perspectives that certain folks give that you might not have can really go into that gumbo that generates something that really is great for us all.
I don't think you can predict who's going to come up with the idea, and not even necessarily the end idea, but just some middle idea, some little piece that puts it all together. That can come from anywhere. Yeah.
And so that's what I'm about, inclusion, inclusiveness. And I always tell people, yes, I'm a certified diverse business enterprise, but the first thing I am is efficient, delivering, and doing more than is asked of me. And so I lead with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, is it okay if I wrap this up?
Absolutely.
And I'm going to wrap this up with a wrap. So you came from a place that was a little mucky, coal mining town in Kentucky. You lost some relatives, so you made a goal, somehow get Kentucky out of coal. You wanted to find another way to have reliance, so you got educated in science. You did that at a university, and you really believe in diversity. There was something that you really did want to get. You wanted housing for every single vet. You're into this thing called cleaning reconciliation, which will give us environmental remediation.
I love it. I love it.
You've missed your calling. Right.
Keith talked about working together on mitigating climate change, being a connector of people, an opportunity for those left behind to engage in making a difference and improving their lives. I couldn't help but think about the Green New Deal and how it attempts to tie everything together. I'm not sure they all should be tied together, but listening to Keith, my understanding clarified. We certainly are all in this together. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. I feel bad about using mucky to describe the town Keith grew up in, but I was just going for the rhyme, and he said I could leave it in, and it made him laugh, and he didn't mind, so it's in there. And speaking of laughing, if you are in San Diego and want some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. Contact me to confirm specific show dates. This weekend I'm doing 2 special shows. The first is Friday, July 19th in San Francisco at the West Coast Musical Improv Festival. My musical team, Triangle, will be performing at the Unscripted Theater Company on 533 Sutter Street in the 7 p.m. block after musical improv legend TJ Mannix. The website for tickets is wcmusicalimprov.com and it is likely to sell out quickly. On Saturday, July 20th, I'll be performing with my brother Jeremy's Comedy Sports Improv Troupe in Sacramento. They are located at 2230 Arden Way, and their website is csz.sacramento.com. Keith is leading projects to clean up coal and leveraging the waste to reduce the cost and environmental impact of concrete. He's providing renewable, sustainable housing to vets, and he's helping to ensure more solar projects get built, all helping to mitigate climate change.